Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Today on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about last mile delivery. Dean, you've had some stuff delivered during this pandemic, right? A
couple things, you know, here and there.
Well, I imagine that a giant LTL freight truck with a long trailer didn't pull up to your house just to give you a box from Amazon, right?
Nope.
And I'd say that's probably the case for most of us. So this is a timely topic because a lot of retailers and a lot of shippers are relying on local drivers that aren't necessarily, major drivers that are out there delivering our packages to us. So to that end, to get into that conversation and talk a little bit about what last mile delivery is, why it's important, what you need to get started, and how it's changed during this time, we're going to talk with Terry Miller from ShipTrack. So he's going to be our guest today. It is time for us to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right. As I said, our guest today is Terry Miller. He is the VP of Channel Sales for ShipTrack. Terry, welcome to the show. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself, what you do day to day at ShipTrack, and how you got where you are.
Hey, guys. Nice to see you, and I appreciate the invitation today. So I'm the VP of Sales at ShipTrack. We are we're sort of a startup company. We've been around. The company's existed since November 2018. The product existed prior to that. The company got spun off, and that's when I came on board to basically build out a channel program. We're kind of a very different ISV. We're very channel-centric, and we work with a lot of the VARs that we're used to talking to in the industry. And I basically run our team. We really have three groups within my team. We have kind of our channel support team, which is the guys that will help, pre-sales, SEs, help build demos, give the partners collateral, whatever they need. I have channel account managers that are really in charge of our relationships with all of our VARs and all of our partners out there. And then we have an inside sales team that is really all about lead gen and sharing these leads with our partners. So that's the team that I run on a daily basis.
Great company, good partner with Blue Star. Terry's got a lot of knowledge that I think we're going to tap into a little bit here today.
That's
on
right.
On that last mile stuff. Yep.
So as I mentioned, our main topic is going to be about last mile delivery. And again, part of the reason we wanted to talk about this is that this is something that has changed and grown quite dramatically in the last few years, and even more so dramatically in the last 6-7 months or so. I know when I'm working at home right now, my office is right out front of the house, so I see every delivery as it comes in.
Yep.
And I think once upon a time, you would expect all your deliveries to show up via UPS or FedEx or something, maybe the Postal Service. But now you start seeing, fleet trucks from, a particular retailer or a particular shipper. You might see just someone's, own personal vehicle even in use right now delivering packages. So that's where this idea comes from. But I want you, Terry, to explain a little bit better. I'm sure you have a much better explanation of, what exactly last mile delivery means and why is it so important to the shipping and retail industry right now?
Well, I'll start with that second question, because I think the why it's important is really, really critical. And that's because it's the most expensive mile, right? You may line haul something from Chicago to LA, and that piece may cost you just a bit, but that last mile from the local hub or local distribution center to your door is the expensive one. It's the one that gets messed up. It's the one where packages get lost, get damaged, all these things. So having visibility and having the ability to track that last mile piece is really, really important. And it's also the hardest one to organize. And going back to the why and talking a little bit about, the gist of what's going on in the industry, e-commerce orders through this pandemic have skyrocketed. I think it's, if I remember the stat correctly, it's somewhere north of 76% increase year over year in e-commerce purchases. So that means all of those things are getting delivered last mile. And going back to kind of your statement that, hey, we're used to seeing a UPS or a FedEx knocking on the door to drop those off. Those guys, 80% of their business used to be business to business, and they would go deliver a package to a few doors here and there. They've had a huge last mile adjustments because they're not going to deliver into to a business that always has somebody there. There's a receptionist or somebody in receiving that's going to be there to sign for the package, get the POD, close that kind of transactional loop. All of a sudden, they're going to houses where somebody might not be at home during the day or during the pandemic. Lots of people, I think, are working from home. So, but it really is the dynamic in the last, you know, 8 to 10 months has really, really changed. And the importance of visibility in that last mile is just, it's absolutely critical. And really that's, you know, we live and work with that every day. That's kind of what we enable. So.
Yeah. And a quick stat there to kind of add on to that. I was reading 93, and this is no surprise, by the way, 93% of consumers want to be informed throughout the delivery process end to end. So not only has our world changed in what Terry just described, you know, just some of the really earthquake that has happened with the pandemic, but also, I mean, you have the expectation of the consumer, you know, their expectation or their desire is to be able to see, hey, I bought this. Where is it?
Right.
Not just, you know, not just, oh, it's on a big truck going from Chicago to LA. Okay. You know, the LTL, but now, you know, where am I in the delivery lineup of the truck that's going to bring it to my house, you know, mm-hmm. type of a thing. But anyway, yeah. We'll get into that, but yeah, 93% of consumers. So people want the information,
you know,
we're at home. We want the information.
Yep. So Terry, let's talk maybe a little bit about some of the benefits and challenges around, you know, managing the last mile delivery piece. You know, I think people hear about this and think, okay, that's great. Like this idea of you got to get something from the hub to the house. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But why do we need to put a lot of effort and time into thinking about like the visibility and the concern? Like, you know, it's just some packages. We're trying to get them there. Right. So maybe let's start with the challenges piece of it. Like you mentioned briefly, like the idea of packages can get lost. Maybe you don't know exactly where they are, what your driver's up to. So let's dive a little further into some of those challenges first. And, you know, what challenges are we seeing out there? What is concerning people about that last mile piece, you know, until it gets to someone's door? And then what are some of the benefits then against those challenges of getting into that real-time visibility piece?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's really the biggest challenge, and it's funny that we kind of mentioned this, and you gave me some notes for this conversation, and then I had a conversation with a customer this morning, and his biggest problem is not the execution, it's the planning, right? And the biggest challenge is because there's so much capacity, there's such a lack of capacity, and there's so much volume coming through the delivery networks, those last mile guys, they're all challenged with planning, right? Because execution, if it's well planned, the execution is going to go well. You'll be more efficient. You'll do all those things. But being able to properly plan. So I'm going to get, let's say, as a company, I've got 200 drivers and I've got 10,000 packages to deliver today. How I plan that work and get it from, you know, the line haul truck that gets in to my sorted onto the dock, and then the driver to grab the packages off the dock, load their vehicles, get out, and then execute that run in a logical step without having to, you know, how you load the truck is almost as important as where and when you unload it, right? So that whole planning piece is a huge challenge. And it's, you know, talking to this customer this morning, he was like, hey, you know, I really expected you guys to be like a scanning and a tracking application, but my problem isn't scanning and tracking. It's making sure that when it gets here, I know what I've gotten, I've planned it properly, it's available for my driver when he shows up. Like all those things are critical to how efficient I am. So that's one of the big challenges, and it's what people don't see about our product, right? Is what we do with the data that comes in from, you know, an Amazon or a Walmart or in Canada, Canadian Tire or a Staples, all of these e-commerce platforms that are sending data. You know, there's all kinds of things that you don't think about. Geocoding addresses. I get an address that you go in and fill a form, and if you didn't type the address in properly, I'm not going to get the right geocode to be able to know where and how to deliver that package. So there's all these little challenges about how I plan the work for the day, and that's probably the biggest hurdle that most of these guys have. You know, they're good at getting, you know, the deliveries done once they're in the vehicle. You know, they have systems in place. But the sheer volume of data that's coming in and how I handle that data, I spread that data out, make sure that everybody's got what they need to do. Everybody knows where they're going or what they're doing. And I do that efficiently. That's a big, big challenge, or a big part of the struggle. And what you're doing is, one, you're turning over your staff really quickly. So a lot of these last mile guys, they have temporary workers. We're talking, you know, I will probably get into some of the gig economy or crowdsourcing. You know, that's a whole bunch of other challenges that it brings, because you're not getting the same people working for you all the time. They don't get to know your processes and things like that. So it's a big, you know, that planning is a big part of it.
Let's stay on the data there for just a second, Terry, and just kind of tapping in. I know I'm going off script here a little bit, but talk a little bit about that data volume and what's happening in your world, if you will. I mean, okay, so 3-4 years ago was a certain amount of volume, and I think you teed it or kind of framed it out perfectly in the sense, because I can remember the UPS guy coming to the office, and that's the only time you saw the UPS guy was when he came to the office with this little package, and right. You know, it was definitely business to business. And man, their whole world is completely changed now. But you know, lump on top of that, these delivery network carriers and stuff like that. But go back to the data. Is it easy to tap into this, you know, now with your software hat on? Is it easy for you to grab all these varying forms of data coming into you from all these varying sources, right? I mean, it's not just Walmart data that you're dealing with. It's maybe manufacturers' data. Talk to us a little bit about that, about the data side of it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I'm not sure my technical team would agree. I said, you know, for us, it's what we do every day, right? We live in that data world. You know, the application is really a tool to handle the data, but it's all about data. If you're a last mile delivery company, your customer is, you know, an Amazon or a Walmart or one of these retailers or a manufacturer, for example, who does local deliveries, or a retailer who is, you know, delivering and fulfilling from a store versus from a DC, right? That's the other big thing. But all of it is data. That's the primary thing that we do, is handle data, parse data, organize data, and then get data out into the field. But the key to a last mile delivery and the key to the customer, and when you talk about the value that we bring to the table, and you know, we talk about the hardware, we're going to talk about the services that we bring. What we're doing is we're enabling a good, clean data flow. You said it earlier. Customer expectation is that I know every single step in the delivery process, right? But in order for me to know every step in the delivery process, I need to get clean data in and out of my system in real time. And that's really the challenge that we have. And that's kind of the world that we live in as a software company every day. But the reason we go to market through partners, and that we really lean on those partners, is without the right data collection solution at the point of use, my data is not going to be clean. If the workflow is not sequential and very simple to follow, because I've got a lot of turnover, my data is not going to be clean. And that's really our strength, is we really enable that clean data flow from you know, the order giver, whether it's a manufacturer, retailer, whatever it is, to the last mile delivery company, managing all of that data, organizing that data, planning that data, executing against it, and then sending clean data back to the customer, which is the expectation, right? They're going to want scan compliance north of 95-96%. I would say right now, a lot of the guys that are kind of the legacy guys that have older systems, they're probably running at 80-85% you know, scan compliance or data compliance. And that's a big part of the problem with, you know, it affects the customer experience, right? If you're expecting something and it shows it's still at the terminal in some city, and the guy's knocking at your door, even though you get it early, you're going to throw your hands up and go, hey, how come I wasn't advised they were coming, right? And that's kind of, you know, a big, big part of managing customer expectations, is making sure that data coming in and out is always clean.
Yeah, and I think so what you just said there, I guarantee you, is going to ring with, obviously, our resellers, the people that are listening to this podcast. They understand data. They understand the need for clean data, being able to manipulate that data. But what's really wonderful about ShipTrack is they're really adding a little piece here into the whole machine, if you will, of the delivery network, and helping to enable resellers. I mean, when you have a conversation, Terry, with a traditional reseller that's a barcodes, you know, reseller, right? They're on the data. They're on the input side. They've got some data, but you're helping them walk and understand how they can parlay some of their skill sets even further down the line through the delivery of that. Is that true?
It really is, right? Everybody says they're solutions people. You talk to every single bar out there, and they all tell you, I sell solutions. But a lot of them revert back to selling the hardware and competing against another manufacturer or another reseller on a deal. And we really bring that kind of complete solution to the table where we marry, and the importance of the hardware is as important as the services and supporting it, making sure that, you know, those devices are up and running and they're configured properly and everything's working and they're on the network. You know, our solution is just one piece of it. And without that hardware and the services to support that hardware, it's really hard because they're always going to say, hey, my ship rack's not working. And 9 times out of 10, it's going to be the hardware, or it's going to be connectivity, or it's going to be some other issue not related to the software. So the importance for us to have good partners out there when we engage with customers, especially kind of in that last mile space, that's very, very dependent on the tech. Like, they don't have a plan B to deliver on paper, those guys.
Yeah, let's go back to last mile delivery.
Yeah, no doubt. So I want to briefly touch on
a little journey there.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I want to briefly touch on, you mentioned kind of earlier a little bit about the gig economy and the workforce around this, because I have to think that a couple things there. One, obviously, you've given a lot of people an opportunity to get involved in this kind of work because, you know, I was looking at an infographic about last mile delivery and I mentioned the fact that, like, for the most part, you typically aren't going to need a CDL license to do this. You know, if you can drive a vehicle, even if it's a fleet van or something.
Or a van.
Yeah,
right, yeah.
You know, most people can drive those without having to have any kind of special license,
yep,
or anything. I think I imagine they check for a clean driving record and that's about it. You know,
yep.
Other than that, you should be good to go. So I have to think, one, during this current situation, you know, where we've been for the last several months, that this has been a nice gig for a lot of people to turn to,
mm-hmm,
because there's probably been the increasing demand. And for some folks that unfortunately may have lost their jobs or needed, mm-hmm, extra income right now, I'm sure this was a great place to turn.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I kind of want to ask maybe a little bit about that when it comes to when you're talking to some of these retailers or some of these companies that are looking to do this, and they're also thinking about, man, you know, we got to think about, do we need to build a fleet out? Do we need to build our workforce out? What does that look like? And I know that's probably not where ShipTrack necessarily helps out, and, you know, necessarily, but, you know, what kind of conversations are you hearing about that around them trying to figure out, like, how do we get the people together to make this happen even?
Yeah, I would say that's a huge struggle. We talk to, you know, again, obviously we have some very large scale customers. We've Purolator Courier in Canada that has 6,600 drivers. And they are looking, and they've just actually engaged us to help them build out an agent model to take all that overflow capacity. And they can't bring those agents on fast enough at this point. And just to give you just a little context, you know, we're 76% over last year over year through the summer. We haven't started peak. The peak season in that last mile world is October through Christmas. Okay. Amazon Prime Days, they just announced October 13th and 14th. From October 14th through Christmas, the volume is going to double from where we are today. And most of the network is at capacity today already, right, for all of these guys. So, you know, there's a whole economy there around those drivers and hiring those drivers. And, you know, guys, you know, there's temp agencies that have started up just to find drivers for these last mile delivery companies. So it's definitely an issue.
Yeah, no it doubt. Is an issue, and that's a fascinating world. That I mean, I guess I was aware of it, but not overly aware. I mean, it seems a little bit more prevalent on the restaurant side, on the hospitality side, with you know, Uber Eats,
right,
or DoorDash or whatever. You know, I place that order. Yeah, I've got, you know, well, okay, I've got teenagers in my house. A lot of them and a lot of their friends, that's what they do. They're DoorDashers,
right,
you know, that, and they just log on and a couple hours a day, whoop, they're delivering food around. Really wasn't extrapolating that yet over to the, what I would call the carrier or, you know, the last mile delivery for goods,
mm-hmm,
you know. But obviously that's going to be a huge gig economy, right, Terry? I mean, that's where you're going. I guess these delivery network carriers, DNCs, if you will, that gig economy is just going to grow, and mm-hmm, it needs to, and I guess, in order for us to be able to even accommodate where we're going to be just this year, what's coming down the line.
Yeah, I mean, you know, between the restaurants and you know, that section of the last mile delivery, which really we don't play in, but it's a, you know, the DoorDash, the Uber Eats, all those, you know, there's one of those propping up every day. There's a lot of local ones in each city. You see the little local kind of gig economy software platforms cropping up, you know, and the last mile guys are in the same boat, right? It's like, where do I find enough bodies to get all this stuff delivered? So as some of those retail jobs kind of fall off, and as some of the brick and mortar stores start to close, you know, those people are going to have to turn. That's where those jobs are going to be, those new jobs that are going to get created. And we get calls we probably get half a dozen calls a week from startup last mile delivery companies across North America, you know, looking for tools, looking for people, looking for, you know, everything they need to get started. And most of them, it's because they know somebody who knows somebody at a retailer who said, hey, if you start a company, we'll give you business. And it's literally, you know, what's going on out there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, then let's dive a little further into the COVID angle of this whole thing. We've touched on it quite a bit already. I mean, I think at this point, everybody understands that there's more deliveries, there's more demand for deliveries, there's more demand for, you know, that visibility and knowing where your packages are. You know, and then you also get into the idea of contactless deliveries, you know, that I mean, to be honest, I always want to contact us anyway. Just drop it off. I'll come out and get it. You know, like, you don't need to ring my doorbell and piss my dog off, you know? So, you know, I was for that anyway. But, you know, obviously
now. It's that personal touch, John. Well, whatever. You know, whatever. Just drop the package off
my dog. I'm just a cranky old guy who doesn't want to talk to anyone. So, but, you know, there obviously now there's a whole different reason why you don't want to know, face-to-face with someone.
Yeah,
it's just as important for the delivery driver as it is for us as individuals as well. So, you know, I want to kind of maybe get a little bit into the software side of things here, you know, which is obviously your specialty, Terry, and talk about, like, you know, what happened with ShipTrack when this whole thing accelerated. I mean, obviously, I'm sure you had plenty more people coming to you and saying, hey, we got to figure out how to do this and figure out the software piece so I can keep track of these guys, know where they're going, know what they're doing. But, like, what kind of questions were you getting? What kind of, you know, demand was coming your way? And how did you have to shift your own business model to accommodate all of this?
Well, so we really didn't have to shift our business model, because one of the key things and one of the big differentiators when you talk about our product is, you know, we're fully configurable. We're workflow agnostic and we're device agnostic. Those are two terms that we use all the time when we talk to customers about what we do. But one of the big things that we get asked by a lot of ours when we kind of start talking, well, who are your big competitors? And a large part of our competitors are customers doing it themselves, right? The traditional way for all these guys is, hey, my business is different from everybody else's. I have my own needs. So I can't get what I need from a commercially available off the shelf software. So I'm going to build my own. What happens when you build your own? And that's kind of the situation we found ourselves when COVID started with Purolator in Canada. You know, they've got 6,600 drivers. We're 3/4 of the way through deployment. COVID hits in March. All of a sudden, we need to go to contactless delivery. I can't hand the device over anymore and get a signature the way that their software, their legacy software, was designed. So they came to us and said, well, you know, what do we do? Well, we're like, okay, it's just the change. We go into the configuration, we change capture signature, we unclick that box, we click the NSR box, right? Take a picture and grab the GPS coordinates, and we hit save and we deploy it to your 6,600 drivers and we're done. And they were like, okay, wow, that's, you know, that would have been a $200,000 project, 3 months and, you know, 16 people involved in approvals and testing. And, you know, and we managed to deploy that in a matter of days. So what that caused them to do was to speed up the deployment of our solution to offset having to invest in their legacy solution as we were kind of, you know, 3/4 of the way through that deployment. So there was a big part of the, you know, of that is your ability to quickly react to the customer needs. And, you know, in a traditional customer where they've developed their own solution, you know, going to taking a picture from getting a signature is going to take time. It's going to take a while. It's training for the drivers. It's all these things. And, you know, for us, that's kind of a simple thing. And it's a big part of why we've been so successful throughout this this pandemic. And we've been growing, you know, rapidly because we kind of bring all those things to the table, right? That flexibility, that you know, and just to tell you a quick story, and I apologize for dragging on in with this. We just got through COVID, we got a contract in Los Angeles with the LA Unified School Board. They called us. We signed a contract with them on Thursday to track COVID-19 samples that they're taking across the way. They signed with us on Thursday. They were live Monday after the long weekend, or Tuesday after the long weekend. We literally deployed 250 drivers over a long weekend to accommodate them and make sure that they could get the kids back to school safely, manage their testing program that was going out. And, you know, no one else can do that out there, you know, really turn something around that quickly. And you know, there's hardware involved, there's services involved for the partner. You know, it was a great project, and it's one of those things that kind of sets us apart.
And I think, go ahead.
I'll say there's two things I love that I just heard in that answer that you gave me, which one was that you really didn't have to change your business model that much.
Mm-hmm.
I love hearing from a company that when a crisis occurs, they say, well, we kind of already know how to deal with this because we already were, you know, ready for this or already had, you know, have a business model set up that can accommodate this particular drive and demand and need. So good on you for that. And then the other, which you just told us at the end there, I love hearing about a company that, you know, their model is one thing, but they found a way to apply it to something else, you know, and obviously like most people would think about you and what you do and what you offer for, you know, standard deliveries.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you found a way to work with somebody that needed to use, you know, the tracing for the, you know, for the samples, which is not probably what most people would think about when they're thinking about delivery movement or whatever. They, you know, they're probably just thinking your standard parcels and people buying pants and, you know, and whatever online. Right. So kudos to you guys for, you know, for seeing opportunity out there and really jumping on it and also being ready for it.
Well, and I think it also, go ahead, Terry, you wanted to say something? Go ahead.
I was just going to add to that. So think of COVID sample tracking as reverse logistics, right?
Yep.
That's all it is. All I'm doing is the reverse logistics piece. If I do last mile delivery and I go deliver something, right, I'm going from a centralized terminal and I go to all my points to do that. Reverse logistics is going to all those points to pick something up and bringing it back to the lab. So for us, we see that in the same light, and it's really kind of, and when we talk about e-commerce, there's an important component of that that everybody forgets, right? Because all of these last mile guys are all getting set up to do delivery. But, you know, there's a 30 to 35%, depending on the retailer, return rate on those deliveries. How do I go figure out how to pick those up and get them back? That's important for the retailer. And that's another way to differentiate yourself. When you go out and talk about last mile is, hey, by the way, I can do all of that, but I can also facilitate the reverse logistics side, and you can offer your customers something that none of your competitors can offer, right? It's just part of the differentiation and looking at the way that those businesses run and trying to think in their world and not just trying to push a product into them, right?
Yeah. It's excellent point, Terry. And again, I'll just harp on the fact that, you know, I know that a lot of our resellers are challenged, you know, additionally, like we all are with trying to help their customers out. But what we're hearing is that the marketplace here in the delivery logistics is looking for increased efficiencies. I think your use case there, Terry, was excellent with your current customer that, oh, had we done this the other way, the old way of coding our own solution, hundreds of thousands of dollars, months and months of trying to get it done. That's exceptionally inefficient. That it really just doesn't even work right now. Mm. So what resellers can that play in this market, or maybe they weren't playing in the market before, they're very comfortable with doing data collection in a manufacturer or something like that. You can start getting into that logistics space with a company like a ShipTrack because you can come to the marketplace with a highly efficient tool that's going to hit the ground running. And really, I mean, it gives them a leg up. And it's helping with the efficiencies overall of the process. It's really a cool thing.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely have to agree with that. So let's maybe put our thinking caps on and our futurist caps on here.
We like the future.
Yeah. We always love to at some point talk about like what's going to happen next. You know, so let's talk about the future tech potentially involved in delivery and last mile delivery. You know, I read about things like drones, and obviously Amazon's been threatening to send drones with our packages for a long time.
Oh, they're not delivering them to your house yet? No, then me neither. Damn.
They were going
to
have like warehouses in the sky that were going to be
blimps,
flying overhead.
Blimps,
yeah.
And
drones
whole
were going to come
drop
the
packages. Whole DCs up in the air, right.
Clearly, it hasn't happened yet. You also hear about like autonomous vehicles, which, you know, we don't have self-driving cars running around everywhere just yet. You know,
they're
being tested.
Yep.
And then I even read something about like robotics, you know, and like last yard delivery, even where you'd have like a robot
Now we're going down to the
door.
Yard,
right?
Okay.
So not even having someone walk to your door, but actually maybe having a a drone, something bringing up your package.
R2-D2 is bringing my package.
You want to talk about contactless? It doesn't give us more contactless than that. So you know, Terry, I'll let you start here. What's what kind of future technology or future aspect of this business do you see coming down the road that, you know, that ShipTrack's already kind of looking ahead for, or just things you think it's going to really impact this as we keep moving along?
That's a great question. And it's funny, when you sent me your notes, I kind of started thinking about that. And we've the chairman of our board is one of these tech geeks. He loves technology. He loves kind of looking at what's coming and being that kind of visionary guy. And the one thing he talks to us all the time about is autonomous vehicles. He believes that, you know, the future is going around autonomous vehicles, and the future, it's today, right? They exist. You can buy a Tesla today that'll drive itself. You know, at what point, when we have a shortage of labor, are we going to, how long is it going to take for us to put a vehicle that'll go to your door and, you know, send you an email, say, hey, come outside, grab your packages, and pop open a little door, and you're going to reach inside and get it, right? So for us, kind of that whole planning process, thinking about how we get our product ready to integrate with some of that autonomous technology is, I think, a big, big part of the future and kind of that next gen, that next iteration. And, you know, it's not, we're talking about the future, but I'm telling you, it's not far. It's not far. We're not talking about 10 years. We're not probably not even talking about 5 years. I would say that, you know, within a couple of years, you're going to start seeing some of that in the densely populated areas. You know, the other thing that I think are going to become in the big cities are automated lockers, where you're going to be able to go and unlock it with your mobile device and, you know, tap on it, and it'll pop a door open and at the, you know, bottom of your building or at the corner of your street or in the, you know, the local grocery store or corner store. I think that's really going to, it's already big in Europe. It's starting here as well in the larger cities. So I think we're going to see that, and we're going to see a lot of that. Right now, it's very kind of brand-centric. You'll go to an Amazon locker, and it's all Amazon. But I think you'll see some of those, and some of that technology is going to become kind of across multiple retailers. You'll be able to kind of a self-service locker system. The other thing, too, I think you know, against the we talk about augmented reality, right, being able to do more with, you know, and I'm talking less on the kind of last-mile delivery piece and more in that kind of cross-docking warehouse. Being able to get some augmented reality. We'll talk about that a little later as well. I'll get into that. But I think some of that's going to come down the line as well.
Yeah, when I think about it, and that's really good insight. And as I was listening to you, Terry, it occurs to me that, you know, economics are going to play here a little bit as well. And I think we're already starting to see maybe some of that, in the sense that, look, I was reading one of the articles, and people right now are willing to pay a certain amount of a premium to have things delivered in a timely manner to their home, right? Because as this pandemic created this dust up over the last 6 months, and everybody's trying to figure out this world, some economies are going to start coming in, some new technology, as Terry just mentioned, with lockers and being able to maybe, you know, push product out a little closer to your home, but maybe it's not being delivered right to your home, but to a locker. And so maybe the premium and the cost is going to be, you actually want it delivered to your house at a specific time. That's the premium. Mm-hmm. But if we can deliver it over here to the locker, it's $5 less to get it to you there. And so, now I got to make a trip out of it as a consumer to stop off at my locker, and, you know, it's got the goods in it. So maybe we're going to see some of that segmentation, right, Terry, as the economics of this kind of plays out, and as companies get savvy to what people are willing to pay for as a premium, you know, as it relates to that last mile delivery, right?
Yeah. You know, one other part of that is if you look at that traditional brick and mortar retail model, you know, where they're shipping from the distribution center out to their stores, you go buy in their stores. So the whole BOPUS concept has been a thing the last few years, where you buy online and you pick up in store. But I'm telling you, for the retailers, the brick and mortar retailers to survive, fulfillment from their stores same day is going to become a critical part. I think I was reading somewhere 22% right now of retailers offer that same day fulfillment from their brick and mortar stores. If they want to survive, they're going to have to be able to do that, right? That customer expectation has been set, right? There's retailers out there that you can go online, place an order, and get something next day to your door. So that expectation is just ramping up. It's never going to go backwards. So they have to start thinking about their ability to do that. So how do you do that? Well, you leverage technology, you leverage the gig economy, you leverage, the last mile guys that are out there doing it for other people. But you have to find a way, and that's kind of the role that we play in being able to walk a company down that technology path to say, how do I execute against, you know, I've got my fulfillment model for my stores down pat. I can get stuff to my stores quickly. I can keep the shelves stocked even during, you know, Now, how do I fulfill from my store to the local addresses, the people within a 2 or 4 or 6 hour window. And we've really had a bunch of those discussions over the last year with brick and mortar retailers in a lot of different spaces to start kind of looking at that ability.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Excellent point. Yep.
Definitely. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. I feel like we could easily dive further into last mile. We say that every episode.
We do, but the reality is, man, this is not going anywhere, no, right? I mean, we've talked about the societal changes that have come about as a part of this pandemic, which is why I love having Terry on today, because this last mile, I mean, come on. That is in the sweet spot of everything that has changed in our society with all these deliveries that are happening. It is not going away. You know, we all know it's not going away because, you know, there's some niceties about it. I'm going to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've doing more online shopping. Yeah, I'm still an old school guy. I like to do a certain amount in the retail. I like to go in and try clothes on. But there's a lot of things that I'm telling you, the UPS guy is at our door daily, yeah, you know, dropping off stuff now.
And I'm the opposite. Like, if I could do everything from the comfort of my couch, I would. If I ever set foot in a store again the rest of my life, I'd be fine with that.
Every now and then. Even trying on shoes?
Well,
come on now.
I will admit, every now and then, you're kind of like, meh. Well, that's where, to Terry's point earlier, like,
oh, the reverse logistics,
yes,
getting it back.
Exactly,
yeah,
because that is the one beef that I do have is when I do buy something that I have to return,
yeah,
it is not easy. Like,
great
even
point.
Even when they do make it as easy as possible, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I got
free
something,
returns. Right. Yeah, no problem.
I got something off of Amazon last week that I needed to return, and I will say it was the simplest it's ever been, where they basically said, like, you don't even need to box it up or get a label or anything. Just take it to your UPS store, right, show them this QR code on your,
yep,
phone, and you're done.
A little easier.
Like,
little
that
better.
Was good. I still, yeah, had to go somewhere, though. You,
right,
know? Like,
yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you.
I want to be able to just set it out on my stoop, and it just goes away, and the money shows up in my account. But that's just me.
And they're coming to deliver to your house anyways.
Right.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
While they're there, why not pick something up?
Yep, that's exactly how I feel about it, too. Like,
bingo.
I'll watch someone deliver something, yeah, and why couldn't they have just taken something back? And yet, to do that, I would have had to pay extra and call them out for a special special pickup, and just, no.
God, see, that's the other wormhole that we didn't even get into today. It's all data-driven. It's around the efficiencies. And Terry, I guess you hit it right off the bat. It's the planning. Right? That to me is part of the planning. They already got the truck on my street,
yep,
you know, so it's just a matter of planning. Oh, what's all happening on that street?
Yep.
I cannot tell. I swear to God, I think there's like 4 or 5 FedEx trucks a day that are up and down the street. And it's like, man, they're getting there. They're not that efficient just yet.
Right.
Right? I mean,
right,
that should be one truck delivering all these and then picking up some other stuff. I guess we'll get there eventually.
Yeah,
with good,
exactly,
people like Terry,
that's right,
we're going to get there.
All right. Well, before we move on to our recurring segments, I do want to, as always, thank our founding members, Elo, Epson, Star, Zebra, and Honeywell. Thank you so much for your support. We could not have this podcast without you, and we like doing this podcast.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
As for our listeners and viewers, if you want to connect with us, if you have any thoughts about last mile delivery or, you know, have a question for us or for Terry, feel free to reach out to us. You can find us, as always, on Twitter. That's at TechConnectPod. And email us, TechConnect@BlueStarInc.com. And as always, please leave 5-star rating reviews for us on Apple Podcasts. That's how we drum up more interest and get more visibility into the show. All right, so we're going to wrap up with our recurring segments. That is Value to the VAR and What's Tech Connecting with Us. So Value to the VAR, this is the segment where we kind of take our conversation as a whole,
mm-hmm,
wrap it up into a nice little bow, and answer questions specifically for our VAR audience related to this topic. So
yep.
Terry, we'll kick it off with you, obviously. You know, I want to talk a little bit about, first, how has ShipTrack really helped out VARs to you know, how has it helped out VARs, and what can they gain by working with software companies like yours to manage this last mile delivery aspect?
Yeah, especially through this pandemic, you know, having a story to tell going in the door. So, you know, having a solution sale, solving a problem, focusing on kind of that last mile piece, that visibility piece, has really been a big part of it. And that's basically allowed a lot of our VARs, and the ones that have been successful with us are the ones that have embraced that solution approach, right? I'm going in, I'm solving a business problem, I'm bringing value, I'm going to sell all my other products, the hardware, the software, the services. But, you know, I'm really opening the door and leading with ShipTrack. I'm building that recurring revenue. And on top of that, I'm selling all the things that I want to sell, which is, you know, the base business. We understand that most of these VARs, you know, the root of their business is selling hardware and services around that hardware. But really wrapping all that up in a nice bow, it does a couple of things. Number one, it'll help them get into, you know, segments and opportunities that they wouldn't otherwise get into. And the second thing it really is going to maintain their margin on their base stuff, right? If I'm competing against somebody else and I'm not bringing a solution to the table and I'm just, you know, I'm refreshing hardware or I'm competing with somebody else on hardware, it's going to be hard for me to maintain my margins, right? That's a race to zero. Whereas if I come in with a full solution, you're not going to get chopped around. As long as you come in with a good price, more than likely you're going to get a higher margin on all the other things that you would have sold that customer otherwise. So we really kind of take that approach. We work hand in hand with the VAR to make sure that the full offering, right, the we call it the triple play, right, the software, the hardware, and the services are all presented in, you know, as one full solution.
Man, he just hit the nail on the yep. head. I don't know that I can get any better than that. You know, I was thinking to myself, you know, VARs that are, you know, if they don't have a solution, which many, many, many of them don't, for this most expensive last mile, right, in the logistics, if they haven't been dipping their toe, they haven't been getting involved in it, you got a great partner here in ShipTrack that can help you. I don't want to say it's plug and play, but dang, it's pretty darn close. I mean, it is a nice, robust tool. They can have the conversation. They can get into that business. Yes, as Terry just briefly touched on it, by the way, there's some recurring revenue available in this type of a model. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't like getting a check in the mail every single month on the recurring revenue, right, Terry?
Mailbox money.
There you go, mailbox money. So it's a good solution right there. And that's the value. He hit it. He hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add to that either. You know, the only other thing I would suggest is, you know, thinking about for our VARs is the hardware piece. And, you know, we haven't really talked a lot about the hardware necessarily. And, right. and Terry briefly mentioned it there too. But, you know, for any of our VARs that, you know, think of themselves as like hardware forward and, hey, I'll drag in a ShipTrack or somebody like that if I need to for a solution piece. You know, think about the mobile devices, the mobile computers.
That's a really good point.
In this, mm-hmm. you know, you are probably working already with these companies in their warehousing distribution centers, you know, mm-hmm. where you're providing mobile devices and you're pitching them on the extended battery life, the ruggedness, the mm-hmm. the operating power, the, you know, the ability to, you know, move data from system to system with ease mm-hmm. that you don't get from a consumer device. And I think that is just as easily extended into the hands of people that are driving these vehicles around and dropping off packages every day. That's important 100%. Hardware that they can use. And the scanning functionality that's so much better than you're going to get on a consumer device. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you're jumping in there with those solutions, don't be afraid to talk about the higher level hardware, especially if they seem like they just want to stick with a consumer device, an Android or an iPhone or something instead.
Yeah. Why would they want to do that?
Yeah.
The manufacturers are all right now going into that, you know, and I call it the prosumer device, right? It's mm-hmm. kind of they're bringing their product down to a price level that's competitive with the consumer devices, but that has the functionality of kind of those rugged enterprise devices. And that prosumer segment is growing quickly. Most of the manufacturers that you guys distribute are getting into that space. And that's really kind of the tools that we can, again, when we go to these guys with a full solution, that's how you talk them out of, you know, a consumer device and their ability to maintain, you know, their business afloat, you know, and to service those. So,
yep, definitely. Well, let's wrap up then with our favorite segment each week. It's What's Tech Connecting with You.
Yep.
This is where we get to talk about a piece of technology or a cool app or a service that is exciting and interesting to us right now that has caught our attention. So, Terry, I'll let you start. What is Tech Connecting with You right now?
You know what? I was thinking about that, and I did a little research, and the thing that I think is the coolest, we've been playing around with Zebra's new heads-up display wearable computer, and I really think that there's a big future in that space. Again, we look at, you know, I'll just give you kind of a quick use case that we're working with. You know, Amazon ships to their DSPs, right, their delivery service partners. I've got a 53-foot trailer filled with, you know, 6,000 packages. I now have to empty that trailer, scan every box, put it, you know, I got to route it and sequence it. So I got to know which route it goes on, what sequence on that route it is for me to load my truck. And that's all done through scanning, printing a secondary label, because there's already a label on the box, applying it to the box, somebody else looking at it, figuring out where it goes. And I love the use of that heads-up technology where I can just pick up a box, look at the barcode, and on my heads-up display, it tells me what truck, what sequence, what, without having to print something, without having to do a secondary function, and everybody down the line can just grab those boxes as they come off the conveyor, slap them on the right route, and as we load, same thing, we're loading the sequences properly by just looking at the box. I mean, those are use cases that are exciting to me, and I really think that's you know, kind of futuristic technology. And I'm really looking forward to kind of that, this current iteration of that wearable tech.
That's awesome.
I love that one.
When we talk about this stuff and you hear about some of this technology, do you ever think like, man, I kind of want to just go work in one of these gigs just so I can play with a cool heads-up display?
Absolutely, yeah.
Can I get one for the podcast somehow? Is there a way like I could have my cue sheet or whatever just right there?
You know what? We know some people at Zebra. Maybe we can get into their lab and just kind of play around in there,
right? Yeah, I'll tell them like, look, we'll talk all about it on the podcast. It'll be cool, you know.
No, right? In all seriousness, though, I think Terry's tapping into yet another one. That, you know, we talk about it being futuristic and wearables, and of course, we had Google Glass, right, which failed miserably, type of thing. But, you know, but I think the technology finally is starting to get there, obviously through what Zebra's doing and those types of things where, that's really cool stuff.
Yeah.
I want to be able to look at something and, you know, it tells me, yeah.
We are totally giving those two nerds that are just wandering around with geeky gear on us all over the place. And we're just going to look like, oh, one of those guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't played with a heads up display, just go get one. Go find one in your warehouse and turn it on and put it on. It is uber cool. It's really, really deep.
Might have to try that
done out. I'm doing it. Yeah, like I said, we know some people at Zebra.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, yeah. All right, Dean, what's tech connecting with you right now?
All right, I got another one for you here, fellas. 3D printed chicken nuggets.
What the hell?
Exactly.
So why?
Well, okay, so 3D printing, you know, that's a thing, right. and that continues to revolutionize certain aspects of manufacturing, and 3D, so that's cool, and I think that's, you know, doing some cool stuff. I never really thought it would get into food, but yes, KFC has printed an article. They're getting into 3D printed chicken nuggets. So they've partnered up with this company called Bioprint or something like that, who has a business, and what they do is they create tissue and organ for medical purposes. All right. So they've got that down. Yeah. But now KFC is going to partner with them, and they're going to try to produce 3D printing technology through 3D printing technology, chicken nuggets. Okay. But they're not going to start it here in the United States or in Canada. Where are they going? They're going Russia first.
Really?
Yeah. She's going to go into Moscow, and so the Russians have to see if the 3D printing of chicken nuggets are going to be okay. Unbelievable, though, isn't it? I mean, wow. I was reading this, I'm like, what? You know, want to go into 3D printing of food? What do you think?
Leave it to KFC, the creators of the Double Down, a sandwich where the bread was two pieces of chicken, to come up with something like this. And our producer Marco is indicating that was fantastic.
Well,
I did not
good.
Touch one
no,
of those
I have
things,
nothing against KFC. I'm not. No, this is nothing on them. This is very innovative. But I was just thinking to myself, wow, 3D printed food. You know, it's going to be a thing, I guess.
There is one little thing about that I think might be cool. Is if that 3D printing process lets you manipulate the shape of the nugget in some cool way.
Okay. Yes.
I could see that being cool for creating like kids' chicken nuggets. Like, you know, I've bought my son the little like dinosaur chicken nuggets, but they don't look like dinosaurs. Like, oh, I could vaguely see a brontosaurus if I turn this the right way. Maybe a 3D printed nugget would like look dead on like something. Of course, then he just want to play with them and not eat them. So
yeah,
I don't know if that's
I'm with
not,
you
so.
Though. But if I could print my own food and make little drums and little drumsticks or I don't know.
Yeah, I could. That's interesting.
3D printed.
Now, to be fair, they do in food service, like especially in like home health care or long term care, where there might be patients or hospitals where there might be patients that can't eat solid food. Mm-hmm. There are puree molds that can be used.
To
make like. It's, you know, like say you have a chicken puree that has to be in a somewhat liquid form or very soft form.
Yep.
And you can actually use molds to make that into what looks like a chicken breast instead.
Got it.
So someone still feels like they're eating something normal, even though it's much softer.
All right, we're going with that.
So I guess we're close to
deep fry
like
that. We'll eat it.
Deep fry. Of course. That's the American way. Deep fry.
Just deep fry it. It's we're good to go. What's tech connecting with you, John?
So, you know, I struggled to think of something for this one, and something occurred to me last night. I've had an Apple TV for a while.
Okay.
And, you know, in case you're not familiar with this, because I don't feel like Apple TV has been, like, as prevalent as, like,
the Roku,
Amazon Fire Stick, Roku, anything like that. So even though they were out there long before some of those are really, you know, before those were really popular in the market. Well, I've had an Apple TV for quite some time, and it's not the same as their service. Like, they have Apple TV Plus, which is their own streaming service.
Okay.
A whole different thing.
Yep.
So the Apple TV is, again, one of those just set-top devices.
It's a box.
Right, a box device that you can load your apps up to as its own, you know, processing power, hook it up to your television, operate from there. It's one of those things, which I feel like happens to me a lot with Apple products, where initially I got it, and I just didn't use it as much as I felt like I should have been, because I had a smart TV. I was like, well, I can do all this stuff on the smart TV. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I've noticed over time, I find myself using it much, much more. Now it's my primary source of, you know, getting into all my streaming services.
Same here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love it. Well, my other cool thing is, a long time ago when this came out, there was some point Apple had said something about, hey, you've got an app you can use to control the TV like a remote. And I did, and it was a terrible app. And if you have an Apple TV, you've probably got one of those tiny little remotes.
I got, yes.
I hate those
But
things.
I also have the app on my yes. phone.
That's where I'm saying, like, oh. I did not know about that newer app because I had the old one.
Oh.
And the old one was an awful app that was not useful and stopped working somewhere. And then I just found out maybe a month or so back that they have a regular, a new remote app
yeah.
that does take the place of the tiny little one. Because if you've seen these tiny little things, it's super slim. It's very small, very thin. So easy to get lost into your
couch. I was just about to go there. Do you know how many times we've lost ours?
It's awful.
I'm walking around the front. Where is the daggone remote?
And it's only got like four buttons and a trackpad at top. Yes. And it just, I don't know. It's not an intuitive remote from what you expect out of remotes. But for some reason, if I use my phone to do it, it's fantastic.
There you go.
The other part I love about it too is if my son's watching something, and by the way, parents, if you want your kids to limit their time watching television,
okay.
do not turn off autoplay on anything they're watching.
Oh.
If they're watching Netflix or Disney Plus,
oh, right, because it'll just queue up the next one.
Right, turn off the autoplay feature so it's not just constantly running. So, but when that happens, and if I'm eating dinner or doing something or whatever, and my son is begging for the next program, the remote's somewhere else, mm-hmm. and he hasn't brought it to me, mm-hmm. I can always whip my phone out and operate it that way. So I Lickety think that's kind of fun.
There you go.
Just yes. a little piece of
nerdy
technology.
A very useful app, no doubt about it.
That's
no
right.
Doubt. Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, that does it for us. Terry, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate
Great job,
your insight.
Terry. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Definitely. So it is time for us to unplug, as always. You know, again, reach out to us if you have any questions. We will be happy to talk to you in the future. For Dean, I am John. Thanks for watching. Self-order, endless aisle, patient check-in, price verifications, cashierless. Are your customers curious about how they can get in on the latest trends in kiosk technology? If so, Elo's Wallaby self-service solutions are the flexible, highly configurable answer to their needs. Wallaby stands are available in countertop or floor models to simplify installation of interactive experiences in public, high-traffic environments. Designed to house a touchscreen display, peripherals, and printer, Wallaby quickly lets your customers put together the ideal self-service solution. Wallaby stands support Elo's most popular all-in-one products in portrait or landscape mode with plenty of space and connections to add barcode scanners, EMV payment devices, power supply, and so much more. Contact your Blue Star Elo BDM or representative to start configuring a Wallaby stand today. Did you know that up to 30% of enterprise mobile devices go missing and up to 25% are unnecessarily sent for repair? Business productivity and profitability can be impacted quickly by improperly maintained, missing, or low-performance mobile devices. Operational Intelligence is a centralized, cloud-based platform to manage the complete lifecycle, operational visibility, and performance analysis of assets, people, and tasks. With embedded hardware sensors designed into Honeywell products, the solution continuously extracts performance data that is periodically sent to the cloud for analysis. Operational Intelligence provides an intuitive user interface and delivers actionable insights that bridges the gap commonly missed by asset management or mobile device management solutions. To learn more, contact Blue Star's Honeywell team. Security risks are real, and endpoints, like networked thermal printers, are becoming popular targets. Zebra is ready to help with their LinkOS thermal printers and PrintSecure. Identify potential vulnerabilities with the Security Assessment Wizard. Control printer access with protected mode and expose breaches before they happen with real-time visibility and management. To learn more and help your customers upgrade from older or unsecure printers, visit the Zebra microsite on BlueStarInc.com or contact your Zebra representative.